This is The Blade and Beyond with the DC Dynamic Duo. Learn every detail about life on both ends of the knife. And now, live from Washington, D.C., your hosts, board-certified facial plastic surgeon, Dr. Michael Somernick, and board-certified plastic surgeon, Dr. Troy Pittman.
Well, 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 here we are. It is Sunday, January 9th, 2022. Welcome to the first podcast of the new year.
2022, here we are, coming in hot.
Happy New Year, Dr. Somernick.
Well, thank you, Dr. Pittman.
It's been a while. Our last podcast was December 19th.
Yes,
time has flown. So the world has changed a little since December 19th. Christmas happened. We had a long break. We took 3 weeks off.
Yeah, the holidays got away from us.
They totally did. The big news the last 3 weeks was the constant loss of hot water in our house.
Oh my God. Are you really going to get into this?
Well, I mean, I think that we get kudos for Christmas Eve. Our hot water heater broke. And it was Christmas Eve, so there was no one to help come and fix it. And so we hosted Christmas dinner at our house.
Yes, there was no Christmas miracle water heater repair.
No, we hosted Christmas dinner at our house, and we did all the dishes and everything with boiling water, kind of like Little House on the Prairie. We were like pioneer women.
I literally had like a standing pot of water that was intermittently boiling to add to the little bowl that we had made in the kitchen sink with some Dawn soap, and just we literally did all the dishes. Because for those of you that don't know, running a dishwasher with cold water doesn't work.
It doesn't.
And we tried that out of desperation, and things were sort of clean, but all had a kind of a greasy film on them.
And then right after Christmas, we got what we thought was a fix, and it worked for a week. And then we came home to no hot water again this week,
which we're currently living in. So this is proved to be, we're very creative.
We are now taking sous vide baths.
Yes. I got a sous vide kit for Christmas, which was great because I'd never done that before. So I decided to do my first sous vide thing yesterday, and we realized, oh, this is a great little heater for heating water to take a bath in. So shortly after this podcast, I have a big tub of sous vide water heating, and I'm going to take a very shallow bird
103 bath. Degree bird bath
very quickly. But anyway, so hopefully it gets fixed this week.
Yeah. And our office is continuing its renovation. We have a great new glass entrance in the office. The med spa construction is continuing. We're on track for later in the spring to open the med spa. And then kind of the same story that we've been talking about in every other podcast, COVID strikes again.
It's never going away.
And this Omicron variant, I feel like it's like the Squid Game.
It's really taking over. I mean, I feel like we hear so many people have gotten it.
I feel like everyone is getting it. It's really crazy.
Yes. I mean, we try our best. We protect ourselves. Thankfully, at this point, we haven't gotten it, but we all know that despite having vaccinations, boosters, etc., that this variant is penetrating into the population.
Yeah, and we're back to high protocols in the office. Obviously, everyone's wearing masks, and we're cleaning the rooms diligently.
Nothing new, really.
But we're having people back waiting in their car.
Which is annoying, yeah.
We don't have people in the waiting room anymore. So, I mean, I do feel like we took 5 steps forward and now 6 steps back, but it's working. We're doing our best to keep everybody safe.
Yeah. And I also feel that, I mean, people aren't getting as sick, thankfully, that have been vaccinated and are making up a very, very small portion of the people that are hospitalized. I think most of the people in the hospitals they've established are unvaccinated.
Yeah, I mean, and we see around the country, you know, I have a colleague in St. Louis who all of her surgeries were canceled because we're back to canceling elective surgery because the hospitals are being overrun and crowded by mostly sick, unvaccinated people who decided not to play their part, not to get vaccinated. And you know, I think that the point is, obviously, if our surgeries get canceled, my breast augmentation gets canceled, boohoo. But I do think that people should understand that it's all elective surgery. So if you have a knee replacement on the books and you're in pain and you can't walk, that's going to get postponed too. And so it's so annoying to me. I feel like it is really irresponsible to not be vaccinated and not playing your part in society. But I'm going to get off my soapbox now. I get very emotional about all of this.
Well, no, that's definitely something. I mean, that's a real thing. And to your point of people getting hip replacements and everything, like, these are big deals for people. So having to cancel those and reschedule them for people that really need these is frustrating, to say the least.
That's right. Well, moving on, it is 2022. It is a new year. And I had a question for you as what do you think in 2022, if you had a prediction for plastic surgery trends, what do you think are going to be some of the trends in 2022?
I think that the Zoom boom is going to roll over into 2022. And that cascades a little bit into the previous topic of COVID, because it's going to continue. You know, from all of your friends and coworkers, that every time I talk to them, they're like, okay, you know, first it was September of 2021, we're going to return to the office. Then it got pushed back to January. And with this Omicron variant and all this uncertainty going on, these workplaces are pushing back in-office work.
Indefinitely.
And so that means teleworking, Zooming, Microsoft Office, Teams, whatever platform you're using that you're staring at yourself for 8 hours a day. So I predict that a lot of neck work is still going to come into the office, because people are staring at their double chins, their sagging skin, their lack of a jawline, their skin falling off their jawline. So I think that is still going to be a big trend in 2022 for facial plastic surgery particularly.
Yeah, and I think really my big prediction for 2022 is we're going to see a continued rise in male plastic surgery. I mean, the fact that we're talking about plastic surgery more, guys are getting more comfortable talking about doing, you know, whether it's toxin, filler. We see kind of a national growth in male plastic surgery over the last couple of years, but I think we're going to continue to see that grow a lot this year as guys embrace plastic surgery more.
Yeah, and that's coinciding with their significant others and them staring at themselves just as much as women are on a daily basis. I also think that we may see, this is sort of off topic with actual surgeries, but related, is a surge in safety. I think that more people with increased awareness of health, pandemic, etc., I think that people are going to be seeking out qualifications a little bit more.
Yes.
Maybe board certification is going to be higher on their list. Are they going to an accredited facility? Because we've all heard these horror stories going to, you know, areas in Miami, et cetera, where they do high volume kind of assembly line type of things. And so I think that the fear of having one of these procedures at one of these facilities and God forbid getting hospitalized in a COVID type of era, or them not having a bed for you in the hospital, that's going to increase people's awareness and desire to get something a little bit safer. So yeah, safety, I think, is going to be much higher on the list.
That's great. So first topic today, we're going to talk about fat transfer to the breast. And why I don't think fat is ever going to replace breast implants.
Okay, so why?
Well, you know, so I did one of the first, if not the first study when I was at Georgetown with Scott Speer on fat transfer to the breast. And what we saw in that study was that you can obviously transfer fat to the breast. It is unpredictable. We've traditionally seen patients, we've said to patients, well, if we do a fat transfer, about 70% of the fat, 60% of the fat will stay, the rest is going to go.
Right. So why do you tell people it's unpredictable, though?
Well, because you don't know when it's going to come and when it's going to stay, when it's going to go, particularly in the breast. You don't know whether one breast is going to retain fat more than the other. And so you'll get a resulting asymmetry in the breasts. You know, if I put 350 cc implants in both breasts, then I know that the breasts are going to change predictably.
Right.
But if I put 350 cc's of fat in each breast, one breast may retain the fat, one breast may resorb the fat, and so then you end up with a much different change. The interesting thing in our study, though, was women liked the fat transfer because they got lipo at the same time. And it was very difficult to kind of tease out whether the patients were happy because they got all this lipo or whether they're happy because their breasts were bigger. But when we showed pictures to third parties and wanted to, we basically scaled the change, the results were kind of like, meh.
Because you looked at MRIs.
We looked at MRI to see what fat retention was. The fat retention really was only a little under 50%. And so...
Well, that's not unusual, actually, when you look at studies that look at the face, with fat grafting to the face. So I don't think that's horrible, in my opinion.
Well, the other thing, though, with fat transfer is we can't really change the skin envelope. And so for women who have smaller breasts, maybe a tuberous breast deformity, where the inframammary fold is high, the fat doesn't have the pushing power that an implant has. And so we can't really change the tissue envelope of the breast with fat the way we can with an implant, because there's just not that mass effect that you get from a breast implant.
Well, you could, but the problem is if you load a breast up with a bunch of fat, it ends up being a blob of fat, and the fat just dies. So that goes back to kind of what we wanted to point out before, is that fat is unpredictable because you really rely on those fat cells to derive a blood supply. And if they don't derive a blood supply, they die. And so you can't just like fill a breast with 500 cc's of fat, because the inner part of that's just not going to get a blood supply and it will necrose and die.
Right. I mean, we see that with fat grafting in the butt. When you put all BBLs. Of that fat in with a BBL, those fat cells end up kind of dying, and either they calcify or they just kind of resorb. And that brings me to the other thing with fat grafting of the breast is dead cells can calcify. Mm-hmm. And calcifications is one of the things that mammographers look at on mammograms for abnormalities. Now, we know that with any breast surgery, there are going to be kind of predictable changes in mammograms. So with a breast reduction, we see little cysts, we see some scarring in the breast. And I think if you're getting your mammograms in a place where there is a breast center that's used to looking at mammograms of surgical patients, they can tell the difference between fat that's died and cancer. But there is always the possibility that you're going to have an unwanted or unneeded breast biopsy,
right?
Because the fat has caused an abnormality in the breast. So I tell patients most of the time who come in who want a fat transfer to the breast, it works best for patients who want a very modest change. It works really great for women who come in who say, I really want lipo. I want lipo of my abdomen and my flanks and my thighs. And instead of throwing that fat away, I want you to put it in my breast. And if I notice a change, great. If I don't notice a change, I don't care, because it's really the lipo. I think if liposuction is your number one priority and breast enhancement is your secondary priority, then you're more of a candidate. But you also have to be, you have to have pretty good breast symmetry to begin with. You cannot really be ptotic or saggy at all, because a breast implant can take a little bit of sagginess of the breast and move that nipple up. Fat is not going to do that. And so
you just have saggy, larger breasts.
Saggy, maybe larger, maybe asymmetric breasts.
That sounds great.
Yeah. And it's expensive. So you're paying for liposuction. You're paying for the time that it takes to purify the fat. You're taking time to inject the fat. So it's not a slow process, and it's not an inexpensive cost. Whereas implants, totally predictable. We can do different things with the breast envelope. So I don't really think fat is ever going to change. Fat transfer is not going to change the need for augmentation with implants.
But it probably appeals to people that are more of the organic mindset, if you will.
It is your own tissue, and so that is one of the pros of it, is you're not having a foreign body or a medical device implanted.
Yeah, I mean, that is similar to why some people elect to do fat graft into their face.
Why do you always have to talk about the face?
Because I'm going back to it. It just makes sense. Oh, my God.
Back to the face.
But listen.
We're talking about the... This is my segment.
I know we're talking about the breasts. But
I'm speaking.
Kamala. But it's the same thing with fillers. People... And I'm going to talk about this. It's the same thing with fillers, though, with some people wanting the more organic type of mindset. You know, they're like, well, I don't want fillers. They don't react well with me. I want my own fat. And they go into it understanding that it's unpredictable, like with the breast. There, I said it.
Okay. Well, you've totally hijacked my body segment
this
week.
Just for 15 seconds.
To bring it back to you and the face. But you are a board-certified facial plastic surgeon.
Double board certified. Thank you.
Okay. So now let's move on to...
In the news.
Okay, this is crazy. This story is nuts.
Yeah, this is an interesting story that was put out by The Mirror. And some other news agencies may have picked up on this. But it's actually...
The Mirror is a British...
The Mirror is a British publication, yeah. But this is a woman. It's actually a transgender woman based in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, she is a self-proclaimed, quote-unquote, plastic doll... who spent a whopping $100,000, they actually put 74,000 pounds in the article, of other people's money to modify her body. And
they specifically say, though, $100,000, most of which were paid for by sugar daddies and other fetishists.
Yeah, fetishists, try and say that three times. That's really interesting to me because they've like literally written checks for her to... basically distort her body. I mean, when you see pictures of her, her breast implants, certainly she didn't get fat grafting because these are huge breasts.
Well, she spent $50,000 alone on revision breast surgeries, and her current breast size is a 30S. Sam.
That's big.
That's damn big.
I just saw
a
picture, and that's really big, you guys. So she's for sure going to need a lift. In a few years, I can say that with the limited knowledge I have on breast surgery, right?
Well, she had a limited, you know, as a trans woman, she presumably had a limited amount of breast tissue. And with implants that big, her breast tissue that she does have is totally going to be atrophied. And it's going to just be skin. Very dangerous to get implants that big.
Well, I take some issue with this article because it actually goes into talking about her body dysmorphic disorder. And instead of kind of going into a little bit more depth into why this should be a cautionary tale, they use quotes from her that she's like, my BDD is not something I'm looking to cure or control. It is the reason I am who I am and I owe it everything.
Well,
like
she also
glorifying
says,
it a little bit.
Well, she says, I have a longstanding fantasy of a man paying me to make my lips so large that nobody takes me seriously as anything other than a sex doll anymore. So what's so crazy to me is body dysmorphia is a subset of obsessive compulsive disorder. And when patients have an obsessive compulsive disorder, the thing not to do is to allow them to sublimate or allow them to substitute one compulsion for another. So she's basically taken her body dysmorphia and redirected her energy into kind of getting off on men paying for her to have surgery. So she's kind of redirected her obsession.
Well, she certainly has priorities. She likes to use her own money on her own clothes, and then she makes other people pay for her surgeries. I'm wondering if she has like a GoFundMe and what exactly the description says.
No, I think she is a you know, one of those people where they do strip shows online and you give them tips.
Oh, okay. So she's got like a little website type of thing. Well, that is interesting, but let me tell you, the honey is working. I mean, $100,000 in donations, that's not an insignificant amount.
Yeah, I mean, she calls it a bimbofication kink.
Yeah. Overall, it's a little bit of a sad article, I think. I just thought I'd talk about it because it's just crazy that people are doing this. And even crazier that there's surgeons that are doing this. I mean, right. We kind of skipped over that. Like, forget the fact that she's seeking these out, but there are people that are looking at her saying, sure, I'll put in a, how big was she? An SSS?
30S.
I mean,
that's like probably 2,000 cc's.
It just looks really unhealthy.
And her next procedure, she wants to get veneers that have little fangs.
Oh, cute. Well, that'll add a new look.
Yeah, maybe so that'll be her 2023 look. If any of you want to look this story up, it's in the Mirror, and the name of the patient is...
Just look up plastic doll, $100,000 donated, and you'll find it on the Mirror.
Juliet Stray of Atlanta, Georgia is her name. So you can either look up plastic doll, Juliet, plastic doll, Atlanta. You'll find it. The pictures are compelling.
Yeah. All right. So now we are going to go to our next segment.
And more facial surgery.
We're going to go back to facial surgery, my favorite. So we're going to talk about lip lifts and kind of break them down a little bit. They've certainly risen, I would say, over the past 4 to 6 years. And the reason, let me back up a few steps.
What is a lip lift?
Yes, a lip lift. So a lip lift is where we surgically excise a strip of skin above the upper lip, kind of right below the nose, and physically lift up the lip, causing a nice lip lift where you basically can show more of the red lip. Now, there are certain people that you look at them and you're like, you have no lip. Like their upper lip is either very long. And what I mean by that is like the skin above the red lip, that cutaneous portion of the lip.
So they don't show any teeth.
They don't show any teeth and they don't have a red lip. You literally look at them and it's like a little line on their face.
Uh-huh.
Those are people that are really ideal candidates for a lip lift because filler looks ridiculous on them. And frequently what novice injectors will do is they'll say, sure, I can put filler in this lip. And they'll put filler in it and it will basically project the lip rather than evert the redness of the lip.
So they get that ducky look.
They get a duck lip and they don't get at all what they want. They actually get less show of their teeth because it's pushing the lip down. So those people are ideal candidates for it. What a lip lift involves, though, is most of the time, so sometimes it can be combined with facial rejuvenation, like a facelift, eyelids, whatever, under anesthesia. A lot of the times if it's done in isolation, it can be done under local anesthesia where we just numb it up. We do the markings and you can actually be awake for the procedure, just not feeling anything.
And you're just taking skin. You're not going all the way through and making the lip physically shorter. You're taking skin superficially?
Correct. It is skin only. The underlying muscle, the orbicularis oris muscle, which lines the lip, is untouched. And the incision is actually designed around the natural creases of the nose. It's actually called a modified bullhorn style of incision. And so it goes intentionally around the natural creases of the nose. So when it does heal, yes, it will be a scar, but the goal is to conceal that scar as much as possible within the natural creases of the face, similar to what we will do on eyelids or facelift, etc. Always trying to conceal the incision in natural creases. So you have stitches for a week and it literally gives you a long lasting result. For this. Now,
wait, I have a question. So would you say that it makes the lip look plumper, like filler?
Well, you're lifting the lip up, so you're bringing that red part of the lip out more, so it does create a fullness to the lip.
And if you smile and you don't show a lot of teeth, once you have a lip lift, will you show more teeth?
You will show more teeth. And as sort of a public service announcement for post-op lip lift patients, you will absolutely feel that your lip was lifted up too much
at the initial
because of swelling, and you will actually see your teeth. And some people, you know, I see the faces of people that are in the operating room with me sometimes that are seeing it for the first time, and it looks almost like you can see the teeth when I lift the lip, and I know what they're thinking. Oh my God,
she's never going to close her
mouth. She's never going to be able to close her mouth. And that's just not the case. It loosens up with time over the first couple weeks and looks totally normal and natural when it's done correctly. And this is done with calipers. So we measure to the millimeter on the lip. We're not just kind of drawing something on the patient, suggesting something. There's a kind of an algorithmic calculation that goes into it.
Do guys get lip lifts?
I have not done a lip lift on a guy.
It seems like it would almost feminize the face.
Yeah, but you know, I have a couple guys that I see that are definitely good candidates that have no lip, zero. And, you know, they may get it at some point. And honestly, I think guys, the scar would conceal even better because it's over a hair-bearing area.
Yeah, sure.
So I think that even camouflages even more.
So who is not a candidate, would you say, for a lip lift?
Someone with a very short upper lip, like that cutaneous lip, the skin between the nose and the red lip. If that's a very short distance, you can't do much with that.
And I would imagine people who smile, they have the opposite of not showing teeth. So they smile and you see their gums. Yeah.
If you have a gummy smile, you are absolutely not a good candidate for it. And frequently, you know, so many people get lip filler these days that come to see me for lip lifts. So I always recommend leading up to their surgery, we have to dissolve all the filler because I want their lip to be to their baseline. Because the intention of going into a lip lift is that they are likely not going to get filler in their lips for a while. It doesn't mean you're never going to need filler in your lips though, because it's going to continue to age just like every other aspect of your face.
So I guess the question is, once you get a lip lift, will your lip get longer again? Like, will it go back?
It will be a very, very slow progressive process. But to that point as well, people will frequently need filler on their lower lip because you're creating a plumper upper lip and you're not doing anything to the lower lip, and you can't do anything surgically to the lower lip to make it more full. So it's not unusual to get a little filler on your lower lip and maybe even a little touch up after the lip lift in the upper lip, just to sort of balance things out a little bit.
This reminds me a lot of breast lifts, where women who have long breasts, we take a little bit of skin and we move the nipple up.
You are unbelievable. Well, back to lip lifts. So I think it's a really gratifying procedure for those that are good candidates for it. And the recovery is really not that bad.
How long? You have stitches, right?
You have stitches for 1 week. Stitches get removed. It is a pink line, just like any type of incision. But the good thing about it, especially in this area, is after about 9 or 10 days, you can put cover up on the incision.
And 10 days for makeup. How long before you can go to a social event?
Oh, probably a couple weeks, I would say. But beyond that, I mean, if you can cover up with makeup, it's sort of very easy to do because it's not like it's a wide scar.
It's right there in the bottom of the
nose. It's a very fine line, yeah. So I hope that clarifies what lip lifts are. If anybody has any questions about lip lifts, fat transfer, reach us.
To the breast.
Yes, to the breast or face. You can reach out to us on our Instagram.
Absolutely.
And
that's lip lift. So we've successfully now done our first podcast of 2022. Thank you all for listening. I did see a patient the other day in the office, and she had listened to one of our earlier podcasts about holding a pencil under your breast to see if you needed a breast lift. And she said, I listen to your podcast. I can hold 3 pens, so I know that I need to have a breast lift. So you know who you are out there in your car listening to our podcast. Thanks for listening. It was great meeting you in the office last week.
Yes. Thank you all for listening to the podcast. If you have any suggestions for future topics, also send those to us. We're always looking to keep it fresh, aside from our loss of hot water and other things that are happening in our daily life.
Bath.
I'm going up to take a sous vide bath with a bath bomb.
Yes. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week. Thanks for listening to our podcast about facial plastic surgery, where sometimes we talk about breasts.
Bye-bye.
That's a wrap. Remember to share the podcast with your friends. Follow the docs on Instagram at SominicMD, at Dr. Troy Pittman, and at DC Dynamic Duo. To learn more about the procedures discussed on today's podcast, visit www.SominicPittmanMD.com. That's www.SominicPittmanMD.com.